The next morning, before breaking camp, Mather and I sat and drank coffee beside the fire. I was still curious about Zenon. I also wondered if anybody knew about the girl I'd killed. Did Zenon say why he wanted me killed?
He says you and your brother Frank had him in an ambush downriver. I guess it made him look bad.
Is that all?
He thinks it was you who broke in on him and tried to kill him over near Carthage. Says it was too dark to be sure, but he thinks it anyway.
Well, he is damn mistaken. I ain't been near Carthage for the longest time. I lit out the day I got out of jail and came to Springfield.
I believe you, but Zenon thinks it was you. He thinks you killed a young woman there, woman by the name of Glenella Zenon.
Glenella Zenon? You mean his wife?
No, it was his daughter.
You mean Zenon was rutting his own daughter?
I wouldn't know. I wasn't there.
Jack had untied the horses and thrown his saddle up on his gray gelding. My mare walked to where I sat beside Mather. I stood up, dusting off the seat of my trousers. Mather, you have a way of getting on a man's nerves, you know that? Mather got up and kicked out the fire with his boot.
I mean no harm. You spoke too quick. Don't blame me for that.
The Samuels had moved back to Kearney over in Clay County. Jack's information had it that Jesse had been taken there by steamboat from Rulo after he'd been shot. Outside a small supply depot, Mather rode in for food while Jack and I stayed in the woods by a creek outside of town.
Why the hell didn't you find out more about Mather before you came searching for me?
I didn't know where you were. He said he knew you were in Springfield, so I just went with it. He never mentions Zenon. You don't have nothing working between you now, do you?
That ain't the point, you know it. You could have found out more about him.
Look, what if I'd asked more questions? You think he would have told me anything he didn't want me to know?
Nah, I reckon he wouldn't at that. But what do you know about him anyway?
He says he's from Pennsylvania, but I don't know. I know he's damn good with a gun, and he's damn good with a deck of cards. I think he would steal a blind man's cane. Says he wants to be a lawman.
A lawman?
I'm just saying what he told me. You figure him out. He says a lawman can make more money than any thief in the world if he plays it right.
He must be crazy.
I figure he might make a good lawman. Did pretty good, getting you to admit you broke in on Zenon.
I didn't mean a damn thing.
You come mighty close. You should have seen your face when he cornered you on it.
You think it's true? That girl being Zenon's daughter?
What's the difference? Zenon wants your hide. He won't stop till one of you kills the other.
A silence passed between us as we stared off into the distance. Just outside of Kearney, near the Samuel place, Dave Mather split off and headed north. It seemed Mysterious Dave did not greatly enjoy the company of others, at least not in large numbers. A half mile from the Samuel place, we met Peyton Jones and Clell Miller. They appeared out of nowhere, and on seeing it was us, they traveled with us all the way there.
What's this about Jesse getting shot?
Yeah, he's been hit bad, but he's starting to come around. Frank and some of the boys are at the house. They'll be glad to see you.
I was surprised to hear that Frank was still alive. As it turned out, Frank and a few others took to the woods and slipped away clean, but Quantrill and two of his squad leaders got caught out in the open crossing a grain field. It was like the newspaper said. The two squad leaders fell dead on the spot. Quantrill lay wounded and paralyzed. According to Clell Miller, Frank snuck back that night to bust Quantrill loose, but Quantrill knew he was dying from a bullet in the spine and refused to go along with it. Riding into the Samuels' front yard was like riding into an army camp. Three tents stood in the yard and a tripod of rifles near the front porch. Either sitting or milling about the porch and yard was as unwholesome a bunch of swags as ever graced a wanted poster. They were killers and robbers to the man. But, as I said, they were family. Among others from the old Quantrill bunch, there was Clell's brother Ed, my other cousins Cole and Jim Younger, Wood and Clarence Hype, Cockeyed Charlie Pitts, Ollie Shepard, Andy the Snake McGuire, and old Bloody Arch Clemens. Seeing them all together let me know right off that something was brewing. I didn't care what it was. I was only there to see about Jesse. Hearing us ride in, Frank and Ma Samuel came out of the house, and when Ma saw it was me, I barely made it out of my saddle before she ran from the porch and threw her arms around me.
Now all my boys are home.
Jack rode over to one of the tents and hefted up a jug of whiskey. With our arms around each other, Ma and I walked up on the porch where Frank stood nursing a fresh pipe.
Cousin, how have you fared since I saw you last?
Well, neither better nor worse. I heard about Jesse. How is he? Frank nodded over his shoulder, and I walked into the house. Inside the kitchen, I stopped like a man struck senseless. At the table, kneading dough was the slapped-down prettiest woman I ever saw in my life. When she looked up at me and pushed a lock of dark hair from her face, I stood dumbstruck. In the heat of the kitchen, her gingham dress was unbuttoned at the throat and lay open just above her breasts. I gawked as she raised a delicate hand and righted her dress. She glanced at me, then away with a coy smile. I yanked my hat from my head and held it before me.
You must be Justin Nash, Jesse's cousin. I'm Zerelda Mims, Jesse's cousin from Kansas City. This is my friend Janine Wilcox of the Kansas City Wilcox.
I'm Miller Crow.
Oh, pardon me. You look so much like Jesse, and I've heard he and his cousin Justin Nash favor.
I am. I'm Justin Nash.
He don't know who the hell he is. Come on in here, dingus.
I walked to the bedroom, still looking back over my shoulder. It was plumb eerie seeing Jesse propped on pillows in that feather bed. In the 4 months since I'd seen him, I'd filled out a little from handling mule teams and eating regularly. He, having been shot and thinning some, especially around his face, put us at about the same size. Standing there looking at him was looking in a mirror. Except for the lump on my left jaw, you could hardly tell us apart. I went right to his bedside and took hold of his extended hand. His nightshirt was open at the chest, exposing a large healing scab. Pus seeped from the edge and trickled down his side. He saw me looking at the terrible wound and glanced down at it himself.
Almost 3 months. It's just now starting to close up.
I took a chair at the bedside. I'd have been here sooner, Jesse, but I just heard about it last week.
Can you believe it? Go riding into Carthage armed to the teeth, fessing up to nothing, and get a set of walking papers. I ride in trying to give myself up under a white flag, and they near shot my heart out. Oh, you ought to think about being a preacher, cousin.
I'm giving it thought. How you holding up?
Much better now, now that I've got that lovely woman here tending me.
At first, my heart sank, thinking he meant Janine Wilcox. But when his cousin Zerelda came in carrying a poultice dressing, I saw how their eyes met. There would be many who'd say if it hadn't been for her, Jesse would have curled up and died that summer. Watching how she handled Jesse as if he was a newborn calf made it clear that we'd be seeing a lot of cousin Zerelda from then on. I sat there a while knowing they didn't even realize I was still in the room. Finally, after she'd finished applying the poultice and left, Jesse looked back at me like he was surprised I was there.
How's life treating you, Mr. Crow?
Well, hard but fair. I've been teamstering, bucking freight out of Springfield the past few months. That's where Jack Smith found me and told me about you. I'm damn sorry to hear it.
I heard you covered up for us at that Yankee trial.
I did what I could. They didn't press too hard.
Fact is, they couldn't have done anything to us anyway. Me and Frank both got pardoned. But we're both obliged to you just the same.
What now for you?
Well, we're clean as snow. We can leave it like it is if we want to. Frank acts like he's interested in doing some serious farming, but who can tell? This damn bullet has taken a lot from me. I don't know yet if I owe them Yankees anything for it or not.
Leave it, Lay. I mean it, Jesse. I know you boys have a lot harder feelings about the war than I do, and I got no right to say it, but leave it lay, Jesse. Start all over from here.
Without Quantrill or Anderson around, they're going to be pressing me to take over. They've been settled in here since they heard I'm still alive.
You don't have to take it up. You can tell them to go their own way.
Listen to you. We're going to have to start calling you Deacon if you keep talking like that.
Over the next few weeks, as Jesse's health improved, I laid around the Samuel place sniffing out Janine Wilcox of the Kansas City Wilcoxes and managed to get close to her every chance I could. There was no question she was the most refined and elegant woman I'd ever seen. Her manners and bearing were pure polish and finishing school. I couldn't believe none of this bunch had made a move on her, but then I reckon they all saw that she was way over our heads. Whatever made me think I could reach her has been a mystery to me my whole life. But despite her sophistication, her elegance and charm, I saw a fire in them emerald eyes of hers and sensed a hunger about her that begged, demanded to be fed. Once I'd stripped off the poise and pretense and looked behind the veil of her proper breeding, I could see clear as a bell. Janine Wilcox was the kind of young woman who would hand-pat a rattlesnake. One hot summer morning, I just flat-ironed my clean white shirt and was shoving it down into my open trousers when Janine walked through the tenant house door.
Excuse me.
She threw her fingers to her lips, but I noticed she didn't turn away.
Good morning. Did you get a good night's sleep?
I finished buttoning my trousers and slipped my shoulders under my suspenders. Seeing my lack of modesty toward her, she faced me with a firm expression of a woman not to be intimidated. I saw right then she was no wallflower.
No. Indeed, I don't see how anyone sleeps in this infernal heat. How about you, Mr. Crow? How do you do it?
It's just a Nash. I sleep just fine in this heat. There's a trick to it, you know.
Why, no, Justin Nash. I'm sure I don't know.
Simple. During the hottest part of the day, you ride out across the flatland into the woods where there's no one around, and you lie in the sun.
And that somehow keeps a person cool of a night?
Sure helps me.
I really don't see how boiling in the hot sun...
You live in town, don't you? Kansas City?
Yes, on my family's estate.
Well, it's different out here. Out here, you do what you have to stay cool.
I saw a flash of excitement as she watched me drop my pistol loop around my neck and slip the .44 under my shirt.
Take off all your clothes.
I beg your pardon.
I stepped toward her, buttoning my shirt. I smiled and deliberately ran my eyes up and down her.
Out there. Out in the woods where no one's around. You take off all your clothes and bathe in the hot sun. Try it sometime.
I stepped closer. This time she stepped back, but not far.
During the hottest part of the day, you get plenty of heat on your bottom, and overnight, the rest of you will cool right down.
That's pure malarkey. Now stop toying with me and get serious.
Yes, ma'am. I already have.
Janine sensed the outlaw quality about me. It fired her young blood to a fever pitch, and I played to that pitch like a fine-strung guitar. We had spent the day making love on the banks of a spring-fed pond deep in the woods beneath a cliff overhang. Near evening, and still both naked, Janine walked out of the pond and over to me.
Do you think I'm a wanton, shameless woman?
Will you take offense if I say you're wanton?
I might take offense if you say I'm not.
In that case, Janine Wilcox, you are a wanton, shameless woman.
Janine closed her eyes and ran her hands slowly from her thighs up her wet body, pushing her breasts into high, firm mounds. The sun, the passion, and Janine's desire melted around me like honey and pepper.
Make love to me, Justin.
And so I did once again, there beneath the wide blue summer sky. It was just after dark when we rode back into the front yard. I sat behind the saddle bare-chested and nearly asleep. Janine sat backwards in the saddle, sleeping against me. Her dress was unbuttoned to her navel and her breasts, moist with perspiration, pressed against me. Before the ride back, as tired and drained as we were, we had tasted each other once more. Afterward, neither of us bothered to attend to ourselves and just got onto the horse and started back. Janine's dress was up across her lap, her pale inner thighs pressed against the saddle. Going into the barn, I saw Quiet Jack come walking up within 10 feet of us, and I waved him away. I didn't want him seeing Janine this way. Me neither, for that matter. Jack stared with his mouth hanging open.
My goodness, you've worn each other to death.
Go away, Jack.
It can't happen, you know.
He walked away. As I lowered Janine from the saddle into my arms, she stirred against me.
What can happen?
Mercy.
Hmm?
Nothing. Just a crazy thought.
But knowing that she would go back to the Wilcoxes of Kansas City, I wanted all of Janine Wilcox I could get, and she felt the same toward me. Over the following weeks, it was all we could do to keep our hands to ourselves in public. I would wake up at night aching for her and she for me. Many nights, we didn't even bother going into the house. Instead, we lay naked in the hayloft till first light, then she would slip inside before anybody stirred. Still, everyone saw what was going on. There was too much heat not to notice. I'll never forget the week before Christmas. Janine met me in the Samuels barn one night after telling me at supper that we needed to talk. Janine was wrapped in a heavy wool coat. She held the coat collar right at the throat.
I'm carrying your child. I'm going to have your baby. I'm not asking you for anything. I don't need your help. I just felt you should know. I'll be going home soon. If you want me to, I'll write and tell you about the baby.
No. I've shamed you, and I'm sorry, but let's leave it at that.
You haven't shamed me. I wanted you, and I've had you. It was my choice as well as yours. Do you think I'm some mindless creature with no will of my own?
No. I don't think that at all. But I don't know what's the right thing to say or do.
I know. Oh, we should have known better.
She closed her eyes. I saw her struggle against a flood of tears, and I pulled her to me.
Justin, what will I do? My family will disown me. How will I take care of a baby?
We'll think of something.
I stroked her long, dark hair and gazed up at the rafters. I had as much business being a father as a hog had stacking wood. Little babies were something I always saw stuck to other people's hips. I never pictured one stuck to mine.
I'm sorry, Dingus, but it's a matter of arithmetic, pure and simple.
Earlier that day, I'd talked to Clell and his brother Ed and mentioned that I'd taken a job with the Bowman Logging Company, starting the following Monday.
Good thing today is Friday. We got the weekend to try and teach you the logging business.
I want this job, Clell. Jeannie and I are getting married. I know what I'm doing.
The trick to the logging business is to get them working for you instead of you working for them. Come on with us. I want to show you something.
No, I know what I'm doing.
Oh, come on, Dingus. It's Friday. It's a pretty day. We'll pick up some of Dutch's homemade beer. Just look at something.
An hour later, Clell and I sat inside the woods line, sipping beer and looking down at the logging company in the clearing below. Ed had ridden down, tied his horse to a hitch rail, and gone inside the office shack where I'd been looking for work the day before.
He ain't gonna do something stupid, I hope.
Nah, you worry too much.
'Cause I really want this job.
Relax.
I mean, I've got responsibilities.
Here he comes now.
We watched as Ed rode up at an easy gallop.
Look at him grin. Ed knows the logging trade.
What went on, Ed? What did you say down there?
He turned his wide, silly grin toward Clell, then grinned at me.
I said, stick him up.
Oh, no. Ed, you didn't.
Yeah!
Suddenly, a man came running out of the shack with a rope dangling from his wrist.
Ed knows his logging business.
Damn it!
All three of us swung our horses around and tore out through the woods. Back at the Samuel farm, I folded the money and stuffed it in my shirt.
See, just don't add up the way you were going to go about it.
That wasn't a damn bit funny. I'm trying to go straight. I really did want that job.
Come on now. Logging is hard, dirty work. You're lucky we showed you the right end of it.
Look at it this way. We paid for our beer, and we made 90 apiece. Logging pays at best, what, $1 a day? You just logged 5 minutes and got paid 3 months in advance.
Yeah, you could log free for 3 months if you had to and not feel bad about it.
Yeah, you could buy Miss Janine a pretty dress, buy you a new gun, get drunk, and go rob some other business.
Yeah, it ain't just logging. There's other businesses you can go into.
Diversify.
Don't limit yourself.
You damn idiot.
Make your money work for you.
Sitting in a parlor with Janine that evening, I took her hand and we gazed into the fire. One thing Clell had said made sense.
I could buy Janine a pretty dress with the money I'd made today. How long would I have had to save up for it on logging wages? I know you're used to a lot, Jeannie, and I just ain't got a lot. She leaned against my shoulder.
Oh, and all this time I've been after you for your money.
Don't kid around. I want to do what's right here, and there's an ocean of difference between your life and mine. I thought about it today when I was discussing some business with Clell and Ed. I can't give you what I know you're used to, and it worries me. It shames me. Janine relaxed against me. I drew my arm up around her shoulders and felt her hair against my cheek. I was amazed at her strength and calmness through all of this. Who the hell ever called women the weaker sex? I'm coming apart in all this, and you're getting stronger every day.
I don't know who started it, but I can tell you it was a man.
February 14, 1866. For me, riding into Liberty that cold morning was a relief from all that had been pressing on my mind. Wondering and worrying about Janine and the baby had borne heavy on me lately. It felt good to be riding the way I did in the old gorilla days. Now that Janine was back with her family, I had made up my mind to pull this one job. With the baby coming, I needed the money. It was that simple. Our wedding had been sad and secretive, not at all what a fine woman like Janine deserved. I had to threaten and bribe a drunken preacher into backdating a Bible register so it looked like we were married 6 months earlier. At first he refused. Seems he'd been in jail on the date we requested. But after asking Janine to step outside, I cuffed him around a little and stuffed 20 extra dollars into his shirt pocket. That took care of the paperwork. We rode straight from the preacher's shack into Kearney. I kissed Janine on the cheek and put her on a coach to Kansas City. Frank, are you really planning to rob a bank?
That's right, cousin. Ain't it the damnedest thing?
Who in hell ever heard of such thing?
It's Jesse's idea. I told him that medicine he's taking must be choking off his brain.
Well, Frank, I reckon if it works, it works. What do you think about me coming in on it?
Hell, cousin, you don't want no part in this, do you?
Yeah, I do, Frank. Fact is, I need the money.
I bet you do.
Frank made a gesture like rocking a baby in his arms. He smiled when he saw me bristle up.
Don't get riled, cousin. You know there ain't no secrets around here, not for long anyway.
Frank, we're married. We're man and wife.
Yeah, I know that too. I ain't figured yet how you married her 2 months before you met her, but by God, if anybody can do it, you can.
Just tell me how, Frank. How the hell?
I heard it from a drunken preacher with a broken nose.
I didn't break his nose. I just smacked him around some.
Don't matter. He ain't gonna say nothing to nobody else.
Why's that?
Cuz, I told him if he ever opened his mouth about it again, I would hammer a spike into his forehead.
At 8 o'clock, as the town clock rang out across the square, we hooked our horses and rode straight down the main street. We had counted on all the ruckus to chase people indoors and numb the town till we took care of business. Six of us jolted to a stop outside the bank. Clell and Jim Younger held our horses near the door as Jesse, Frank, Cole, and myself sprang from our saddles and ran inside. Two cashiers, Greenup Bird and his son William, had just unlocked the doors when we came spilling in with our guns pointed at them. In spite of the commotion outside, they were so stunned they almost smiled, as if to welcome us in for business.
Get your hands up!
With that, it finally dawned on them they were being robbed, and both their faces turned chalk white. Since this was the first civilian bank robbery in the United States, I reckon nobody knew what to expect. Cole stood on one side of the door and me on the other. I threw Frank an empty feed sack, and he and Jesse forced the two men behind the counter and into the vault. Jesse acted like he had been robbing banks all his life. Frank glanced around and smiled at me and Cole.
Ain't this the damnedest?
Frank filled the bag with gold coins and paper money.
Oh, damned if it ain't.
Let's go!
In what seemed like seconds, we were out the door, up on our horses, and pounding out of town. I remember the look of surprise on everybody's face as we ran out with the bag of money. I looked over at Clell and saw he had his pistol in the air, ready for action.
Is that it? Hadn't I ought to shoot at something?
Then, just as I was feeling really good about it, near the edge of town, a young fella went running across the street. that somebody behind me put 4 bullets in his back. Watching that young man fall to the cold ground made my heart sink down into my belly. I swear to God, I felt like stopping and running to him. But there wasn't a damn thing I could do. If I'd known right then who shot him, I believe I'd have killed that person. All I could do now was ride on. All the way to our meeting with Jack Smith, I let the shooting fester in my mind. As soon as we dropped down and started swapping our saddles to the fresh horses, Jack sidled up to me.
How'd it go?
Then, seeing I was good and riled up about something, he backed away and turned to Jim Younger.
How'd it go, Jim?
I could feel hot blood pounding in my head as I yanked the cinch on my saddle. I jerked so hard the horse jumped away, slammed against Cole Younger, and knocked him to the ground.
Watch out!
He got up and slapped dirt from his legs.
Watch out your damn self!
Cole's smile half disappeared, then stopped. He shook his head a little like he didn't believe his ears.
What's that?
I stepped away from the horses and faced Cole. I had my hand thrown out, ready to grab my pistol.
You heard me, damn it! Every blasted one of you heard me!
Easy, dingus.
No, you take it easy. And don't call me dingus again. Not ever. I want the poltroon who shot that boy to step forward and show me how he did it.
Everybody, even Frank and Quiet Jack, fanned out with their hands near their guns. The whole bunch were my brothers in arms, but there wasn't a one there who wasn't ready to put the smoke to me. I'd stepped in deep, maybe too deep, to get out. Seeing what was about to happen, Jesse dropped his reins and walked toward me real slow with his hands held before him waist high.
Stay back!
He kept on coming slow and easy till he got 4 feet from me.
Cole, you and Jim feel like helping Jack take them horses to the barn?
Not just yet. I want this settled.
Jesse shook his head.
Of all people to throw down on, why did you pick him, huh?
That feller in Liberty didn't deserve to die. I want the son of a bitch who shot him.
You blaming Cole?
I'm blaming whoever shot him.
Step away, Jesse.
Jesse held up a hand, quiet and cold down.
You feel so strong about that boy getting shot. You're wanting to take a chance getting shot yourself just to make up for it? Is that it? You listen to me. We ain't riding gorilla here. What we're doing is robbing. It's too bad about that boy getting shot, but that's part of it. This is the business we're in.
Step away, Jesse.
Jesse stepped closer to me.
I'm running this bunch, cousin. If you gotta blame somebody, looks like I'm the one that killed that boy.
I know you wouldn't do that.
And you don't know Cole did it. If you're just looking for a way to die, Cole's the best way to do it. If you're trying to make up for that shooting, there ain't a damn thing you can do to change it. The only thing you can change is from now on. The only way to do that is to ride away from here and not look back.
I want this matter settled here and now. Jesse, step away.
You hear him? I can either stop this thing or let it happen. Tell me what you want.
Step away, Jesse. Jesse stepped out from between us and I stared at Cole from 20 feet. We were too close for either of us to take a chance. Like as not, at this distance, both of us were buzzard meat.
Hold it, Cole. I'm the one shot that boy.
Clell stepped over almost between me and Cole. I turned slightly toward him.
No, you didn't. I did.
You're both lying. I did it.
Jesse clamped his hand against his chest near the old wound. It bothered him all the time.
I really feel like hell, cousin. And you're just too damned aggravating. Jack, since you're the only one who didn't shoot that feller, would you mind busting cousin in the back of the head so we can go on?
I saw Frank and the rest of them smile. Everybody sort of eased down at the humor of Jesse's words. I was thankful that it was over. But then, no sooner had I relaxed my gun hand, Jack Smith had snuck up and whacked me across the back of my head with a rifle barrel. When I first woke, the whole world was blood red. After a few minutes, I remembered everything that happened, and I looked across the campfire at Quiet Jack Smith. The pain in my neck pounded as if my spine was being used for an anvil.
Finally woke up, huh? I reckon you're wondering why I knocked the fire out of you?
Yeah, Jack, I really would like to know.
Jack walked over to me with a plate of beans.
Well, I figured Cole would have killed you even after everybody else settled down. See? And I would have had to throw down on Cole, which I had been wanting to do anyway. We don't like each other. Then that would have led to something else, and pretty soon we all would have been shooting each other.
Jack,
I don't know what to say.
So I think I did the right thing, don't you?
Jack, it was over. Jesse stopped it. He didn't mean for you to actually knock my damn head off. It was over.
Well, I say it's always best to play it safe in that kind of situation.
I just sat there and stared at Jack for the longest time. I was lying to myself when I rode away from Quiet Jack outside of Clinton County. Heading up to Kansas City, I swore I would steer clear my cousins and the rest of the bunch. Yet I missed them before I was gone 3 days. When Jack and I split up, I remember him telling me to look for him around Abilene if I changed my mind. I was 3 weeks getting to Kansas City because I kept coming up with things I had to do first. I had to play a little poker in Springfield, which was out of my way to begin with, and I had to make a couple of horse auctions over in Otterville. Out of my way, but leaning closer. I knew I was just stalling about facing Janine's family. Even though it was only for a short time, just thinking about it tightened my collar down 3 sizes. Still, I promised Jeannie I'd square things for her, and I would do it if it choked me to death. In Springfield, I showed up at Hickok's table and produced a respectable roll of money. He welcomed me with as friendly a smile as I'd ever seen him muster. But I saw in his eyes he had a pretty good notion as to how I came up so flush all of a sudden. When he'd last seen me, I was teamstering for $1 a day. Now, I was trading top riding stock and gambling with the high rollers. On my second night in town, Hickok and I played poker with a couple of bankers from over in Kansas. The Liberty Bank robbery was a running conversation all over town, and when they brought it up, Hickok watched me out of the corner of his eye.
Imagine the audacity of those scoundrels.
If you ask me, it was a bunch of border trash that'll have to be dealt with in the strongest manner. Who ever heard of robbing a bank? Bank, for God's sake.
Hickok dropped $10 in the pot.
Just think. They'll be off spending that bank money on whores and whiskey right up till they hang. It's you, Mr. Crow, if you're staying in the game.
Picking up $10, I pitched it in the pot and took a sip of warm bourbon. Call. Seeing they didn't have any chance left in the game, the two bankers left.
You've learned to play a good game, but you play a little dangerous.
Dangerous?
When you know you got a good shot at the pot, you jump. Too quick, too reckless, without even thinking it out. Could get you into big trouble someday if you don't smooth it out.
You taught me to play.
Not the kind of game you're playing.
Well, maybe I'll smooth it out once I get used to winning. It's been a rough haul. I'm still making up my losses.
And making fast money is habit forming. It's important to know when to quit.
What about you, Mr. Hickok? You win a lot. How do you know when to quit?
It ain't for the money. Money is just a scorecard. I play for the sharp edge, the life that comes with it. Win or lose, the game reaches way past the table.
The morning I left, Hickok showed up as I adjusted my newly bought rifle scabbard and slung the holsters across my saddle horn gorilla style, butts forward for a ride and draw. Glancing at my string of 6 riding horses and my new supply of shooting irons, he smiled and lowered his brow.
Looks like you had a good visit here, young friend.
That I have, Mr. Hickok. I fared well at my horse trading. Not that I've found any bargains. Horses costing what they do these days. But I did get a good string. Take a look at that gray gelding.
Now, hold on. I ain't in the market for a horse. Young friend, I don't give a damn what your business is. You know, for all I know, you could rob the bank in Liberty. And it wouldn't matter to me if you did. I just wanted to let you know I'll be leaving here myself in a few days. I'm taking a sheriff job over in Hayes City. You ain't headed that way, are you?
No, I'm headed to Louisville, Kentucky.
Oh, Louisville. Yeah, good town. You'll like it there. Good horse trading. Good poker. Yeah, you'll do well there.
I swung up into my saddle and smiled down at Hickok. If Louisville is that good a town, I reckon you'll never see me around Hayes City. Hickok tipped the cigar against the brim of his hat. I looked back at Hickok as I led my string of horses off the main street and through the alley out of town.
He stood leaning against the hitch rail, smoking the cigar and tipping his hat to people along the street, like a ringmaster addressing an audience. I don't know what I was thinking riding up to the Wilcox mansion the way I did. I could have stopped and barbered down and cleaned up first. Instead, I rode into Kansas City through a hard 2-day rain and didn't stop till I reached the Wilcox's front door. Hitching my muddy string of horses and my mare beside a fancy carriage, I went to the door smelling wet, dirty, and just a little like bourbon. It was wrong, and I knew it. I reckon I was bent on making a bad impression. Their Negro houseman let me in with a look of uncertainty that eased a little when Janine came down the stairs and threw her arms around me. I felt the tiny bulge of her stomach press against me, and I pulled back, not to slight her, but out of fear I might hurt her or the baby or something. She looked like I'd hurt her feelings, but before I could explain why I did it, her mother showed up. As bad as I looked and smelled, Janine stepped beside me and slipped her arm in mine.
Mother, meet my husband, Mr. Miller Crow.
There's no other way to say it. That hawk-nosed, high-bred old bitch smiled the friendliest smile you have ever seen, but there was the gleam of straight razors in her eyes.
How dare you do what you've done to my daughter?
I breathed a little easier when Janine told me her father was out of town on business. He wouldn't be back for a week. I was picturing maybe he'd fall between cars and the train would run him over. Judging the hatred in my mother-in-law's eyes, I dreaded seeing what my father-in-law was going to think. Over the next week, I made myself familiar with the Wilcox stables and busied myself with my horses. Jethro, the houseman, was a good old feller who would take a nip from a jug anytime I offered it. And I offered it every chance I got, trying to find out what I could about the Wilcoxes, especially Mr. Wilcox and whether or not he carried a gun. One morning, Janine and I went out to the stables right after daylight. We needed to get together and talk somewhere away from the poison-eyed mother-in-law. I also had a curious hankering to try my mare around the circle track. Janine watched as I saddled my mare. I didn't really know what to say to my wife. Since the day I watched her leave Kearney, I had tried to dispel any notion of us having a life together. The night before she left, she made it clear. All she wanted from me was a name for the baby and a pretense to justify it to her family. After that, I could drift out of the picture as far as she was concerned. Janine laid her hand on my shoulder as I rubbed the strange bridle on the mare's muzzle to get her used to it.
You're really good with horses, you know that?
Seems like I do better with horses than I do with people.
No, I mean it. You're really good with horses.
I turned, facing her.
I heard you.
She started to touch my arm, but changed her mind. Huddling up in the wool coat, she folded her arms and looked out across the track.
I mean, as good as you are with horses, you could do something. I don't know, maybe make a living at it some way.
I do make a living at it.
What I mean, Jess, is...
It's Miller, remember? I'm Miller Crow.
See what I mean? Your name is Jess. You go by Miller Crow. Most of your friends call you Dingus.
Not anymore, they don't.
But you don't have to live that way, is what I'm saying. You're a good man. I see it in you. You're better than that bunch of border trash. You could do something with yourself.
That border trash was good enough for you when you came looking for sport. Now all of a sudden you're better than everybody? Don't forget, we didn't come here and drag you down to Clay County. And as I recall, you kind of fancied the idea of me having a whole string of names. I think it warmed your blood.
Jess, this is not the way I meant it. I'm carrying our baby. I'm scared. I'm scared for us and for you. Don't you understand? I need you with me now. I need you close.
I led the mare out of the barn. I stopped and turned, facing her again.
You made it clear before you left.
Please, Jess, don't do this.
Oh, don't worry. I'm here just like I promised. I'll play this out for you straight up. I'll play it so smooth, you'll have no problem marketing your goods to some respectable young suitor after I leave.
I swung up into the saddle. The mare sensed it in the reins and jolted forward in the direction of the track. Inside the gate, she stopped at the red and white starting pole. Glancing around, I saw Janine standing there watching, and I couldn't face her. Hooking the mare once easy with my boot heels, we shot out like a bullet.
The big bay took the track like she'd been a circle runner all her life. We were halfway around the quarter-mile track before I realized how fast she was running. She didn't waver an inch to one side or the other, and I felt her belly down, coming out of the short turn. Then she stretched out without me asking, and it felt like we'd hooked onto a comet. Riding on that raked and tended track was like sliding down a ribbon of silk. The mare laid out a stride that felt longer than two hay wagons end to end. I had run her flat out before, but always through dips, valleys, and plug washes. Never anything like this. Knowing she had her footing on a flat, sure surface, she tore the earth apart. I just drew up in the saddle and leaned forward close to her neck, her mane whipping my face like a handful of mad hornets. Passing the striped pole into the second lap, it came to me that this mare had run a circle track before somewhere. I'd taken her from a dead Yankee officer because she wore no brands or markings. She must have come from his private stable. By the end of the fourth lap, the big bay let down on her own. She followed my instructions and trotted right out through the track gate into the holding yard. All the times I'd run her in and out of fires and gun battles through Ozark Swamp and up and down rock faces, it had never dawned on me that I had me an honest-to-God thoroughbred.
Lord Almighty!
I dropped from the saddle and ran to Janine, leading the mare behind me and wiping dirt from my face.
Have you ever seen such a run?
Never in my life.
I saw her smiling, and I saw tears in her eyes. Her cheeks were blush red from standing there crying, watching me run the mare. I looked at her, and my heart came unwound. This wasn't the proud and willful Janine Wilcox I'd known back in Kearney. This wasn't the fiery, wanton mistress who had filled my nights with sweet, aching lust. No, sir. This was just a young woman in trouble. Trouble that bore my name. Her guard was down now, and she was scared and hurting. It didn't matter what she had said back in Kearney. It was all pride and pretense. Now she needed me, and she'd been honest enough to tell me so. And what had I done? I'll be damned. I'd made her hurt worse. I pulled Janine to me and just stood there holding her.
Oh, I'm so afraid.
I stroked her hair and held her against my chest. I was careful she didn't see my face. I wanted to tell her that I felt the same way. I was scared and confused and hurting right along with her. I wanted to tell her, but damn it, I dared not say a word right then for fear my voice would betray me. I bit my lip and stared out across the endless green lawn. A short time later, after dropping the mare back at the stable, we walked the grounds in the cool morning air as sunlight broke through the treetops. There was so much we didn't know about each other, so much we needed to talk about, and so much more we needed to understand. It would be spring soon, and I wanted to square things between Janine and her family before the baby came. Our plan was for me to stay long enough to make our marriage look respectable. I would stay gone, supposedly on business, and in a year or so, I would disappear altogether. I reckon it wasn't the best plan in the world, but it would have to do. A cool breeze lifted Janine's dark hair and pitched a strand across her face. She raised a hand and brushed it back. Her face was pinched blush red from the chill in the air, and her green eyes looked strained from crying.
Oh, I must look terrible. I don't usually act the way I did back there. Can I blame it on my condition?
Janie, I swear to God I'm sorry for what I said back there. I'll never talk to you that way again. Whatever it takes to keep from shaming you and the baby any more than I already have, I promise you I'll do it. And you'll never hear me say a cross word.
Oh, you didn't shame me, Jess. What you said back there was more true than I want to admit. I was reckless last summer, same as you. I've never known people like you and your cousins. I've led a sheltered life here under my father's rule. It was my first time on my own, and it got out of hand.
She stopped on the trail and turned to face me.
I know we only married to give the baby a name, and we don't know a lot about each other, but I've thought of you often since I came home. I want to know you. Jess, I want to be your wife. I mean, really be your wife. Maybe having your baby inside me is causing me to feel the way I do. I love you, Jess. I didn't know it back at the Samuels, but now I'm certain of it. I love you, and I want you to be my husband.
Janie, let's not push things. I don't want to say something just because you want to hear it. We both know what was said before you left Kearney. Maybe our worlds are too far apart. Maybe what you said was right. I didn't want to think it then, but I've come to accept it. I don't want to open an old wound. Let's go with what we've got for now. I took my string of horses into town the next morning and sold four of them for cash money. I traded the other two against a Morgan stud and picked up a fancy saddle to boot. From the auction circle, I drifted over to number 3 Missouri Avenue and played the tables till noon. When I saw I'd lost $50 before ever claiming a pot, I cashed in and drifted next door to Landry's Lucky Lady Saloon. There, I ran into mysterious Dave Mather, who I hadn't seen since we split off near the Samuel place last fall. Dave was wearing a constable's badge pinned to the lapel of a well-cut black suit. He packed a brace of 38s in brand-new shoulder holsters. Not knowing what name I was going under, he just tipped his fingertips to his hat brim when I walked up to him at the bar. Well, if it ain't Dave Mather, my name ain't Miller Crow.
Mr. Crow, how have you been since I seen you?
No better, no worse. See, you got yourself a badge and a new set of iron. Law work must agree with you. Mather waved down the bartender. He ordered me a shot glass and poured me a cut from his bottle of rye whiskey.
How'd your cousin ever come out from that chest wound?
Real poorly. Last I heard, they took him back up to Nebraska. I reckon he's died since then.
You hear about that bank robbery back in Liberty?
I heard some talk. I figure them boys have been caught and hung by now.
Oh, not yet. If I was them boys, I would sure walk real quiet for a while. I hear they killed a college boy, and the sheriff in Liberty has a list of witnesses.
That a fact. I threw back a shot of rye and poured another.
None of them even covered their faces. Imagine that. You know what I think?
What's that?
I think they wanted to be identified. I figure they're going on a bank-busting spree, and they killed that boy just to let people know they mean business. I think we'll be hearing a lot more from that bunch.
Is that what the law is thinking?
Oh, I don't know. That's just my opinion. But if I'm thinking it, somebody else is probably thinking it too. The point is, if I was riding with that bunch, I'd make damn sure I knew what I was getting into. 'Cause it ain't no temporary thing to whoever is running the gang. He means to make it a career.
What's the law doing about that bunch?
Right now, they don't know much to do. They're kind of waiting to see what happens next. Bank robbing is something new. The locals are getting what they can from witnesses, but as far as tracking them down, they gave up after 6 hours.
That's interesting. I believe you're right. Anybody riding with that bunch better keep an ear to the ground.
Mather nodded and leaned in close.
I heard the greenbacks and silver that was taken was old enough they can't be traced. But the gold coins were fresh from the mint, and they'll be spotted easy. Now, I know a feller down in Texas who buys hot money. He's willing to sit on it a while and run it out a little at a time. I figure that Liberty money is already spoken for. But if I'm right about that bunch hitting more banks, and I knew somebody could get word to them, well, that man and I would both make some money.
I tipped my shot glass toward Mather and tossed down the rye.
I might know somebody like that.
Mather smiled as I turned to leave.
Tell your cousin I hope he gets feeling better real soon.
By the time I reached the Wilcox mansion and quartered my horses, it was dark and well past dinner time. That suited me fine. I didn't like dressing for dinner, and I particularly didn't like sitting at the same table with Janine's mother. Old Jethro let me in through the back door, and I handed him a half-full bottle of Eagle Spray rye whiskey. Glancing around, he pulled the cork.
Thank you.
After he had his drink, I nodded behind him toward the dark house. Is everybody turned in for the night?
Well, Miss Wilcox is done gone to bed, but Miss Janine is in the sewing room. Want me to fetch you some coffee up there with her?
Please do, Jethro. That'll be fine.
I knows you young folks need some time to yourselves. I'll fetch up coffee right away.
He corked the bottle and turned to stoke up the wood stove.
Ain't my place to say so, Master Crow, but, Miss Janine seems so sad. I hate seeing her so sad.
I went quietly upstairs and to the sewing room at the end of the hall.
Stepping through the door, I saw Janine stitching a border on a small wool blanket. She looked so peaceful and serious there in the glow of the fireplace. She was nothing at all like the fiery young woman I'd known and run wild with at the Samuel place. She looked up at me.
How long have you been standing there?
Oh, about an hour.
I know better than that. I heard you through the window when you rode in the stables less than 20 minutes ago.
You got me there. I seated myself close to her on a wooden chair and propped a foot on an ottoman. Jethro came in grinning and served coffee. I pulled out of my dirty boots and pitched them beside the chair. After Jethro left, Janine pulled her chair beside me and held out the half-finished crib blanket.
Oh, see, it's the first one I ever made. Not bad, don't you think?
It's pretty, Jeannie. Real pretty. I sat my coffee cup on the chair arm, got up, and walked to the fireplace. Whoever invented fireplaces must have done it so people would have something to stare into when they didn't know what to say.
What's wrong, Jess?
I shrugged and shook my head, still staring into the fire.
Did I do something? Say something?
No, Jeannie. No, baby, you didn't say or do anything. I kneeled beside her, taking her hands in mine. I was just thinking about some things past. Suddenly, I felt tired plumb to my bones, and I laid my head in her lap. I felt her hands brush my face. I drifted. I sensed our tiny baby so close to my face, yet in a place of peace, of silence, away from the struggle, the fear, the pain, and the killing. Janine lay the soft new crib blanket across my shoulder and brushed my hair back from my face, and I lay there for the longest time. When I got to the Wilcox stables the next morning, I felt better than I'd felt since before the war. I was carrying around more of the war, the killing and running, than I realized. That night, with my head on my wife's lap, I reckon I let some of it go. Funny how you think something's a long way off in the past, then suddenly it jumps right out at you. Of course, I didn't realize back then what was bothering me. It takes a man years sometimes to figure out what he's running from. I was just gut restless and worn out, tired from ways keeping my guard up. Janine was the only person in the world who'd ever stepped inside. Back at the house, Janine was up and around, pulling open the curtains and straightening the bed. I stepped right over and caught her by the arm as she reached to fluff up the mattress.
Here, you shouldn't be doing that.
She smiled and pulled away.
I mean it. You need to take it easy.
I turned her around, holding her hands.
You don't have to do a thing around here, so relax. You'll be plenty busy around July when that little feller gets here kicking and cussing.
What makes you so sure it's gonna be a little feller? Little girls get here the same way, you know.
I hugged her close to me.
I don't care which it is, so long as it's all right and looks like it's mama.
Thank you, Jess.
Thank me for what?
For coming here. I wasn't sure you would. I'm glad you did.
I'd say there were some folks who would have bet against it, but I wouldn't miss meeting your folks for the world.
We sure got ourselves into something, didn't we?
Nothing we can't straighten out.
In 100 years?
Yeah, about that long.
Cronin Wilcox was a big suit full of man, rough cut, but cleaner than a prize bull. I sized him up as a man accustomed to good food, good living, and good whiskey. If his shoulders didn't get that broad from building his fortune, they surely got that way from packing it around. Thrown on the same griddle, the two of us looked like a thin slice of beef jerky beside a full round of prime rib. When he first got up from behind his desk and came around toward me, I remember thinking that his nose was near as wide as my fist. Instead, I stood looking up from under my hat brim while he looked down at me like something he scraped from under his thumbnail. Remembering my manners, I took off my hat and stuck it under my arm, then reached out my hand toward his.
I'm Mr. Miller Crow.
He ignored my hand, turned, walked to his bar, and poured himself a drink. I let my hand fall to my side and wiped it on my duster as he stepped back behind his big oak desk.
I know who you are and what you are, and I don't like neither.
Well, now. I stared off at the ceiling, just nodding my head and considering. I knew Janine would never forgive me killing her pa, and I wondered just for a second if she would forgive him for killing me. Either way, it would be hard on her. Finally, I flipped open my duster.
Might as well get the old wheels rolling, by God.
Snatching out both my pistols, I dropped them on a chair.
Let's don't beat around the bush and hurt each other's feelings.
I crossed the room in two quick steps. I bent down on the way and jerked my 10-inch Glades knife from my boot. I slammed it down an inch deep in the middle of his desk. I jerked right out of my duster, and I slung it across the room.
2 feet!
What the hell are you doing, boy?
Get back 2 feet, same as me, and say when you're ready.
You're out of your mind, boy. A knife fight?
Let's get right on to it.
You're not serious.
I count three. One.
Hold on, damn it, boy. Listen. I say listen to me.
Two.
Hold it, boy. This is crazy.
He raised both hands chest high, and I knew I'd won.
You call me boy one more time, and you better be ready to do some cutting and hacking, because only one of us is going to leave this room. They'll take the other out with a mop.
All right, son. Let's just settle down here. Not do something we'll regret.
I let my hands down some.
You're calm, Mr. Wilcox. I come here and respect you as the father of my wife, but I'll stand for no man's insults.
He stepped away from the desk, and I saw his hands were as calm as my own. He was no coward. He just saw that he'd stepped out of line with the wrong person, and I reckon he didn't want a chance dying or killing over a mouthful of bad talk.
How the hell am I supposed to act? You've ruined my only child.
I have shamed your daughter, Mr. Wilcox, and I wish to God I hadn't. But we're married, and I'm wanting to do right by her and the baby. That's why I'm here.
If you want to do what's best for her and the baby, get on your horse and ride out.
It ain't that simple, Mr. Wilcox, and we both know it. If I thought my leaving here would smooth the bumps out of the road for Jeannie and the baby, I would have left days ago. But I can't ride out knowing you'll hack and cow Jeannie and the baby for the rest of their lives, and that's exactly what I figure you're gonna do. I shamed her once. But if I leave her here under your thumb without some kind of understanding, you'll shame her from now on.
Why, you rotten little bastard!
No offense, Mr. Wilcox, but I'm just speaking flat out to you man to man. I'd like to work something out here in a good business-like manner if we can. If we can't, we can always go to cutting.
Business? You dare to refer to my daughter's future as business?
That I do. Fact is, Mr. Wilcox, right now Jeannie is the only business I've got. And I ain't budging from your life till my business is settled.
I circled around to the bar and poured a tall water glass full of fine bourbon. Old Cronin stared at me the way a growling dog watches a house cat. I circled back around him and propped my behind against his desk, sipping the tall drink.
See, Mr. Wilcox, I ain't used to this high living. Of course, I adjust real easy to anything. Always did. The longer I stay here, the better I'll come to like it. So, till I know things are square here for Jeannie and the baby, I'll stick here tighter than a fly in a bear's ass. I can keep your barn half full of auction stock, suck up this good bourbon, and make a name for myself around every gambling hall and whorehouse in Kansas City. And just as soon as they say my name, they'll say Cronin Wilcox's son-in-law. You know it as well as I do.
I'll have you run out of here.
Oh, I know that. But you can't shut me up lest you kill me.
If you love my daughter, you couldn't put her through that kind of torment.
I never said I love your daughter. I said I care what happens to her and the baby, and I do. But I wouldn't be the one putting them through it. I'd put you through it, and you'd do the rest. Anyway, if her and I are going to lose, we might as well lose big. Of course, that's only one way it can go.
Are you getting to the part where you're going to ask for money to get rid of you?
No, sir. Ordinarily, there's nothing I care more about than a bag full of warm money. But this has nothing to do with me getting money from you. This is about me giving you money.
You're going to give me money? Where would somebody like you come up with any money? Or should I dare ask?
Oh, no. You shouldn't. But here's the deal. I'll give you $10,000 now and another $10,000 in a month if you let Jeannie and the baby live here from now on and not cut them out of your estate. That's a fair amount of money for her to raise the child without costing you a dollar. That sends me down the road out of everybody's life forever. Wouldn't you call that a bargain, Mr. Wilcox?
Bad as I hate wasting good bourbon, I took a big sip, wiped my hand across my mouth, and pitched the rest into the fireplace. Old Cronin stared at me real hard, but the wheels were starting to turn.